Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. Negotiation in one form or another is likely a part of your life every day. With your spouse, your child, your boss, or colleagues, we all deal with conflict.
So here's Steve Carroll playing Michael Scott on the NBC show The Office as he tries to use negotiation to resolve an office impasse about a poster.
How about Angela makes the poster into a T-shirt which Oscar wears? That way he can never see it, and whenever she looks at Oscar, she can see it. Win, win, win.
No.
That's no.
Okay, well, brainstorm. Own the solution.
How about Angela can keep it up on Tuesdays and Thursdays?
Okay, that is called a compromise, and it is style 3, and it is not ideal.
Okay, so Michael Scott doesn't like compromise. Neither, apparently, do many members of Congress. So how do you get there? What is the route to a win-win-win solution? According to William Ury, co-author of the best-selling book Getting to Yes, the key is understanding ourselves.
Getting to Yes was published over 3 decades ago, and it's required reading now at many business schools and other graduate schools. Ury is now out with a new book, Getting to Yes with Yourself and Other Worthy Opponents. William Ury is co-founder of the Harvard Program on Negotiation and joins us in the studio live now. Welcome, William Ury.
It's a great pleasure to be here, Lisa.
I realize if you took part in that office negotiation we just heard, it probably wouldn't be half as funny. So you're willing to take questions from listeners, correct?
Absolutely. Anything.
Excellent. Okay, listeners, what are your observations and questions about negotiating on a global level, on a personal level, and how you get to yes with yourself? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, and you can contact us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So, William Ury, I want to get to the philosophy behind your book, but first I want to ask you about, I think, a very illustrative example from the book. It's actually from a book that you're quoting called Passionate Marriage, and this is the story of Susan and her husband, Frank, who are unhappily married. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, well, like many couples, they're having a really difficult marriage because Susan wants Frank to speak, to talk to her. She wants him to talk about his emotions. And the more she presses him, the more he clams up and they get stuck. And pretty soon after the years, she's had it. But she finally comes to a point where she realizes in her talk with her therapist, actually, that blaming him, just egging him on, actually has a counterproductive effect, and that she's got to start by really understanding herself, not reacting, and taking responsibility. And by doing that, she develops what in negotiation we call your BATNA, your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. She just decides, look, I'm going to take care of my own psychological needs. And she announces this to him and says, look, I'm going to take care of myself, and I'm going to look at your decision about whether or not you really want to have a marriage where we can have communication. To me, communication is absolutely sine qua non. I absolutely need it. You can decide. Well, once he was freed to make his own decision, he could then take steps towards her, and they were able to put the marriage back together. But it was only when she kind of came into her own power, in a sense, really understood her own situation, that she was able to transform the situation.
Okay, so you call that as well in the book, putting yourself in your own shoes.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because for years I've been counseling people to put yourself in other people's shoes. That's right. The key to successful negotiation, to a win-win-win. But I've realized it's actually hard for us to do. It's hard for us to listen to others because our minds are so full of thoughts and emotions all the time where, you know, we're thinking about our problems, that we don't have space to think about the other side's problems. So paradoxically, the initial step is to listen to ourselves, to put ourselves in our own shoes, understand ourselves so that we can be less reactive and focus really on the prize and go for what really matters. If we can get to yes with ourselves first, it makes it a lot easier to get to yes with others.
Okay, Anthony mentioned Congress. So we're going to start big, and we're going to start difficult with you. Earlier in the show, we were talking about President Obama's State of the Union address. I want to play a little bit from the president last night and ask you to respond to what his message is.
There are a lot of good people here on both sides of the aisle. And many of you have told me that this isn't what you signed up for. Arguing past each other on cable shows, the constant fundraising, Always looking over your shoulder at how the base will react to every decision. Imagine if we broke out of these tired old patterns. Imagine if we did something different.
What would that different thing be, Bill Urey? Because Congress and the White House are so entrenched in their roles, what could go differently?
Yeah, they've been very actively getting to know over the last...
Getting to know versus getting to yes.
Over the last 6 years. And the question is, as the president is inviting them, challenging them, saying, what about getting to yes? Well, I think it starts with actually with listening to each other, because that's what's not happening. In other words, listening to what the other side's really saying. I've participated in a number of experiments of bringing prominent Democrats and Republicans together. And one thing, you know, just to kind of listen to each other, you know, you don't have to agree with each other. Just see if you can understand where the other side's coming from. What are their real concerns? You know, around the environment, for example, you know, around climate change. When I've listened to Republicans, you know, their fear is big government. They're afraid that all the stuff about environment is just talk for big government. Unless we deal with that underlying concern, you're not going to bring them on board on a joint agenda around dealing with the major issue facing the world today.
Sure, but when you're talking about policy, I mean that's a different kind of movement than if you're talking about smaller government. I mean, smaller government is kind of an ideology. So where do you find, you know, agreement on immigration or gun control or gay marriage or whatever it might be? Or the environment?
Well, you know, the thing is, Lisa, I this is what I've found, because I've, you know, I've been at like a congressional retreat where we had like 200 members of Congress, you know, Republicans and Democrats together. And it's true, when you actually get them in small groups, you know, and they start listening and talking to each other, they are human beings and they can begin they're constrained, obviously, by, as President Obama was saying, by their base. But I believe there is a better way. And I think part of it comes from the American people demanding that that we start to evaluate our politicians on how successful they are at getting to yes with the other side and getting things done. When we start demanding that, I think the politicians will start to respond.
Okay, that sounds very good. Just very quickly, how do you demand it? You're saying by throwing the bums out or not throwing the ones you
well,
like out?
Yeah, or like, for example, starting to evaluate them on, and let's see, who are the members of Congress who are best building bridges? Do we evaluate leaders, for example, just on how well they talk or on how well they listen? Do we evaluate leaders on how well they, you know, throw bombs across the aisle? Do we, you know, support them for actually building bridges? Is compromise a dirty word? And we're not talking about necessarily just kind of, you know, horse trading. We're talking about actually dealing with the basic issues that make the country stronger.
Okay, but how about a national level, where there are leaders who say, yes, compromise is a dirty word, and how about on a local level with your neighbor who doesn't at all want to compromise or a colleague who says, you know, this is a non-starter?
Well, the first thing is, as you see in both at the local level and at the national level, you see right now you're seeing a lot of finger pointing, a lot of blaming. There's the blame game. It's their fault. It's their
more
mistake.
Entertaining, I think.
Yeah, and so the
they're watching TV.
Right, it is more entertaining. But to me, you know, as it, with your neighbor, in, with your spouse, whatever, it starts with you taking some responsibility. It starts with you. I mean, one of the key concepts, the foundations of getting to yes with yourself, is to go to the balcony. In other words, learn to kind of like, it's like you're negotiating on a stage. Part of your mind goes to a mental, emotional balcony overlooking that stage, where it's a place of calm, of perspective, of self-control, where you can keep your eyes on the prize. Because when you're, as the saying goes, when angry, you will make the best speech you'll ever regret. Hmm. And that happens far too often.
Okay. Once again, for our listeners, we'd love to have your questions about negotiation and getting to yes with yourself. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can also pose your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. You have been in on so many negotiations from the international level on behalf of the United States with the former USSR, resolving legal entanglements to trying to make peace with an irritating boss or coworker or a neighbor. Can you give us just a very brief example in those instances of how your understanding of your client or yourself, I suppose, entered into the conversation and made it better?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I was once in a face-off with President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. I was involved as a third party between him and his political opposition at a time when Venezuela was sliding towards a civil war. And I had a meeting with him at midnight, and he said, Yuri, so how are things going? And I said, well, I think I've been talking to some people. Things are going pretty well. He said, what do you mean going well? You're not seeing all those dirty tricks those traders are up to. And he proceeded to lean in very close to me, my face for about, and yell at me for about 30 minutes. And so I'm there, I'm trying to get defensive, and I'm thinking, oh, my work is going down the drain. But then I remember to go to the balcony for a moment.
Oh, and go to the balcony. Mention what that is.
Yeah, go to the balcony is kind of take a step back for a moment. See things in perspective. Don't react. And I remembered, ask yourself what's important here. And I said, is it really going to do me or anyone any good for me to get into an argument with the president of Venezuela? So I just listened. I listened for about 30 minutes to him. And after 30 minutes, he began to run out of steam. And suddenly, after 30 minutes, I see his shoulders sort of go down. And he says in a very weary tone of voice, so, Yuri, what should I do? And that's the sound of a human mind opening. And then I said, well, Mr. President, I think the whole country needs to go to a balcony. We need a break. It's Christmas. Give everybody a truce. He said, that's a great idea. I'll announce it in my next speech. His mood had completely shifted. How? Because I had controlled myself. I had not reacted. I had listened to him. I had gotten to yes with myself so that I could then get to yes with him.
But did you get ultimately what you wanted?
Yes, I did. Absolutely. And in the end, he says, yes, that's a great idea. And he says, and in fact, over Christmas, I want you to come on a trip with me around the country. I mean, his mood had completely shifted. We were able to kind of de-escalate the situation because I hadn't taken the bait.
Yeah, but how's that different from taking a deep breath or counting to 10?
It's similar. The counting to 10 and taking a deep breath are practical ways of going to the balcony.
Tell us a personal story. You have lots.
A personal story. Well, for me, for example, one of the things that actually really stimulated me to write this book was about 16 years ago when my daughter was born. She was born with a lot of medical complications and had a lot of surgeries, and we had to deal and negotiate with a lot of doctors and nurses under stress and dysfunctional situations. And, you know, the tendency was, you know, to get irritated and blame a doctor or blame a nurse or whatever because of our tension. But I realized that wasn't doing us any good, my wife and me, and it wasn't doing Gabby, our daughter, any good. And so by learning to put myself and put ourselves in our own shoes, understand our own thoughts, our own feelings, not react, take responsibility, reframe the situation from inside, we're able to change those relations with the doctors and nurses so that even, you know, doctors who were very insensitive, for example, suddenly became our friends, our allies, and we all worked better, and Gabby is now a much healthier child as a result.
Can you give us an example, though, of one of those conversations? Because if you're trying to understand
Sure.
yourself, it's real. You're acting on behalf of your daughter.
Right.
You might be, you know, you're not speaking across purposes, but how do you do that?
I'll give you an example. When Gabby was like 4 or 5 months old, we were consulting a doctor in the corridor there. My wife, Lizanne, was cradling Gabby. And this doctor, in front of all his medical students, Gabby was just about to have an operation on her spinal cord. And he said, oh, I've seen a lot of these cases where the child ends up paraplegic. You know, that's, you know, he was just announcing. And so, you know, you feel like lashing out at the doctor. But is that not going to do any good? You know, I went to the balcony. I just said, okay, let's just pause for a moment, hit the pause button. And sure enough, like 2 months later, that doctor turned out to be the only surgeon who could help Gabby, and he became a lifelong friend. But it was those kinds of situations where I learned that self-mastery, self-control, self-influence is the best way to influence others.
Yeah, it's funny. When you answer these questions, you're not necessarily saying what you say in response. You're talking about having patience and listening. And I guess that must be a major part of it, using reserve.
It is. And really thinking, you know, having a chance to think through what's important. Because in this world right now, we're under so much pressure. We're under so much stress. There's so much going on, internet and so on. You know, email, you know, you hit the reply button, or you hit, you know, if a colleague sends you a memo you don't like, you hit the reply all button. It goes to the entire organization. Things start to escalate. Our ability to pause for a moment, to use a moment of silence, to just kind of think about what's important here, what's going to really advance my purpose. That ability to get to that inner yes before we get is key if we want to get to that outer yes and resolve the difficult conflicts that all of us have to resolve every day.
Do you think that every negotiation is resolvable?
No, I don't. I don't think so. And that's why in negotiation, one of the most important things is to develop what we call your BATNA, your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. In other words, what's your best course of action to further your interests if for some reason you cannot reach agreement with the other side? If you can't reach agreement with with a customer, is there another customer? Is there another supplier? Is there another job? What are you going to do? And knowing that gives you a sense of confidence and freedom, and allows you to, and a sense of power that allows you to negotiate in a more effective way.
You have been writing about negotiation and getting to yes since your first book with the late Roger Fisher three and a half decades ago. What has changed since that time? Have we changed?
Well, I think, yes, a lot's changed. I mean, back in those days, the bestsellers on the list were looking out for number one and winning by intimidation. And Getting to Yes came out and said, wait a minute, there's got to be a way in which we both can benefit. We both can get our interests met. You know, there's got to be a way for mutual gains. And that was a revolutionary idea. Now you hear on The Office, you know, win-win. It's so commonplace. But back then it wasn't the case. So that's one thing, is we recognize that, you know, that it's important to do this. Now, is it easy? In the last 35 years, you know, I've specialized in difficult situations. And my basic question is, what stops us from getting to yes? And oddly enough, you know, I worked mostly on how do we deal with difficult people. But then it dawned on me that perhaps the most difficult person that we have to deal with in the course of the day is right here. It's us. It's ourselves. It's our human tendency to react.
Nice to have you here. William Urey, author of Getting to Yes with Yourself and Other Worthy Opponents, and co-founder of the Harvard Program on Negotiation. He's going to be speaking about his new book tomorrow night at Harvard Law School. If you'd like more information, go to our website, radioboston.org. William Urey, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, Lisa. And I wish you and all the listeners much success in getting to yes with themselves and with others.
Thanks so much. Stay with us. Coming up, how allegations that the Patriots use deflated footballs could affect their Super Bowl game. I'm Lisa Mullins with Anthony Brooks, and this is Radio Boston.